trade talks between the U.S. and China are in danger of hitting an impasse. We're talking about what this means for Wisconsin's economy and the world here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. President Trump is renewing his trade attack on China, calling the nation cheaters. Last week, speaking before the Economic Club of New York,
we'll soon be up to $100 billion in tariffs. And you haven't seen inflation, and you haven't seen, in many cases, price increases. Our farmers, because I have a very good relationship with our farmers, our great American farmers, I call them patriots, they were hurt very badly by China because China targeted them because they were my vote.
Have higher tariffs affected your company or your crop? Is your company a large importer of steel and aluminum? We're at 800-642-1234. Van Mobley is a history and economics professor at Concordia University, Wisconsin. He's president of the Village of Thiensville. Van, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
It's great to be back, Kate. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with the Trump administration's trade deal with Canada and Mexico to replace NAFTA, USMCA. So this deal, still under review by House Democrats. I understand House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is meeting today with Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer to get this deal going here. We had talked with Congresswoman Gwen Moore, who had raised concerns about provisions on labor laws and medicine and the environment. And then we also talked with Congressman Ron Kind, who also echoed enforcement concerns.
The agreement that was negotiated by the administration was weak on enforcement. It's important that we have strong enforcement mechanisms in it. In case someone isn't abiding by the agreement, we have an ability to follow up then and make sure that they are, or to level sanctions against them if they are cheating in some way.
So, Van, why should the House pass the Trump administration's new trade deal?
Well, I think there are strong enforcement provisions in there. And you must remember that this deal is with really two of our closest allies, Mexico and Canada. And actually, it's in the context of an emerging, I think, in my own view, is it will be a permanent alteration in the way that our trade relations are with China. So I think that Mr. Lighthizer and the administration have listened very carefully to Democrats. They've moved toward the Democrats in many ways. The U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement is a good deal. Nancy Pelosi has said repeatedly that she wants to get to yes. I think really they are at yes, and it's time for us to sign it on a bipartisan basis with the input that has been provided by the Democrats in multiple areas. And I think that we're about to do that, and I look forward to be actually, I mean, it'd be nice if it would be before Thanksgiving, but probably by in mid-December or maybe earlier. So I think that it's going to go through. And I thought about, you know, whether I would say mean and nasty things about all the Democrats today or just say nice things. And I think, let's just say nice things. This is a bipartisan accomplishment. And I think all Americans could be happy for it, particularly farmers in Wisconsin, because this does have some special provisions that will allow them greater access for dairy products, for example, into Canada. But I also think that the agreement, in addition to being good for manufacturers, is also good for farmers in particular. And on the enforcement
let's look at the enforcement here for a moment, because that is the key sticking point to enforce these labor laws and for strong punishments, including the banning of imports if Mexico fails to meet labor laws. What do you see there?
Well, I think you won't get a complaint from me on that. I think if people violate trade laws, whether they're the Mexicans, the Canadians, or the Chinese, then we should have enforcement mechanisms in place to hold them accountable, which basically means, you know, some sort of a tariff barrier or a sanction. So I'm fine with it. I think that the Mexicans and the Canadians, to be honest with you, are more trustworthy and reliable than some of our other trading partners. And I think if you have in place the ability to sanction or fine them, I don't think that it will have to be used very often. But it may have to be used every now and then. So, I have no problem with that. I would point out, however, that the Democrats are really keen on really being mean to the Mexicans and Canadians, whenever they want, but not when they don't want. But these are our friends. They are the Mexicans. They are the Canadians.
Wait, where do you see that happening?
Well, it's like the immigration debate, that, you know, the ongoing immigration. Let's don't build a wall with them, but let's really make it easy to slap some counter sanctions on them. Well, I'm sure if you asked the Mexicans, they'd say, you know, the wall would be a lot less damaging to us than these, you know, really scrutinizing us and whacking us over the head with trade sanctions all the time. So, but as I said, I think that it's going to be fine. So I think that this is going to roll forward.
Talking with Van Mobley, a professor of history and economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin. You can join in. Business owners, are you an exporter or importer? What has your experience been like with tariffs? Are you thinking about getting more involved with international trade? What do you want to know? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Van, national labor unions have been pushing against the trade agreement, worried about the loss of American jobs. Wisconsin has thousands of union workers in manufacturing. Should these workers be concerned about the trade deal?
I think they should actually be very optimistic about it. One of the big things that people don't talk about is, but I think that they should, is the what they call the regional content rules, which are actually going up. And what that means is a higher percentage of goods sourced in the United States have to be present, for example, in the automotive cars. I think that's good for the automotive industry. Those provisions also are included inside the with steel and aluminum in particular. So I think that those are very good. And I'm particularly on the automotive industry, which is a lot of the stuff. So there's some provisions that they really increase wages across the North American continent. And I think it's good. I mean, I really like the deal. There has been a great deal of Democratic input, and they've been, you know, sometimes the Republicans or in the business interest haven't necessarily liked some of the labor provisions that hike up some of the wages and then some of the content laws that make it, I think it went from like 60% to 70% has to be sourced in the North American continent. So I think that really we're just kind of pushing and screaming around the edges about how we're going to slice up the pie among the United States, Mexico, and Canada. But, you know, that's a pretty good that's like a nice family dispute that we're having, but we're going to resolve it because everybody's going to have a bigger piece. Everybody's going to have a bigger piece of pie, and I think it'll make the Mexicans and the Canadians and the Americans all very happy. I think it'll make the workers very happy, too. But I also think it'll make the business very happy because what they're going to have is they're going to have certainty. And the certainty is going to be of the type where they'll know that they need to begin to build the new manufacturing plants that they're going to be building in the next 5, 10, 15 years. They need to place them in North America. And I think American workers are the best in North America, but I do think the Mexicans and the Canadians are very good, and I don't begrudge them economic success. As a matter of fact, that's key to our success.
So how much does it matter whether this deal is approved today or months from now?
I think it matters because we're seeing is the renegotiation of our trading relationships, not only in North America, but across the globe. And I think the Trump administration has had a very good approach. And what you're seeing is now we're seeing North America fall into place. We've also got some new deals with Japan and Korea. I think the Japanese deal is very key in the sense that it will also allow us for some more agricultural products there. And that's very key because we're bringing our allies close to us. So this has a geopolitical component as well as an economic component, because I'm not optimistic about a continuation of the trade between the United States and China as it's been constructed over the last 20 years. As a matter of fact, I think we're moving away from that.
And let's pause there on China. We're going to get to China here in just a moment. Van Mobley, a history and economics professor at Concordia University, Wisconsin. And you, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about President Trump's trade policy. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We see few signs of progress on U.S.-China trade talks. The U.S. Ambassador to China, Terry Branstad, was at the White House earlier this week. Two words from him on the status of talks: they're going. trade negotiators had originally hoped to sign a deal last weekend at an economic summit in Chile. That was called off. So what questions or concerns do you have about the state of trade negotiation as it looks like today? What do you want to know about trade policy and tariffs? Join in 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. Van Mobley stays with us. He's a history and economics professor at Concordia University, Wisconsin. So, Van, on our program recently, we talked with Congressman Glenn Grothman, who seemed to praise President Trump's overall trade strategy, but he also gave mixed reviews of individual tariffs.
Insofar as he's going to try to do something with intellectual property, the patents and that sort of thing, I applaud him for that. I wasn't a big fan of the steel and aluminum tariffs, but it looks like we've gotten over the worst of the hump there.
So the steel and aluminum tariffs landed in May of 2018 and were dropped about a year later as part of the trade deal with Canada and Mexico. There was a lot of talk about this. Looking back, were they worthwhile?
Yes, and I think the provisions in the USMCA about steel and aluminum content are worthwhile. I simply disagree with Congressman Grothman, who I know. His mother lives right down my street, so I see him quite frequently. He's just wrong. The tariffs were useful. We have to maintain a steel and aluminum capacity in the United States. And we will. And if he thinks we'd be better off if all our steel and aluminum capacity went to people that we're slapping with all kind of sanctions like the Chinese, then I think he's just living on another planet. So you have to do what you have to do in cases of necessity. And this was one.
Well, let's shift to the trade war with China. Wisconsin farmers are under pressure from it, but you say other factors are playing a role in the farmers' challenges. How much can you attribute to the trade war right now versus other factors?
Well, I think that what you've seen, if you've seen the expansion of agricultural capacity in Brazil a great deal, and then that really, so there's, in some ways, there's been an over, much more agricultural production on basic commodities, in particular corn and soybean, then the world can soak up. This has been exacerbated by what I consider to be a necessary trade spat with the Chinese, which is going to continue, by the way. The House and Senate both passed bills that the Chinese do not like at all over the Chinese behavior in Hong Kong. And it's very difficult to sign a new expansive trade deal that will reduce trade barriers whenever we're saying the Chinese are not good actors. So if you have a problem of trusting the Mexicans and Canadians, there's no way on God's green earth you're going to trust the Chinese. And I think so we're going to be disentangling from them. And in that context, the Chinese have bought more stuff from the Brazilians than they otherwise, whereas they used to buy it a lot from the United States. But we should also remember that the Chinese have had a big hog problem. So a lot of their hogs are dying or are already dead, and therefore their need for basic agricultural commodities is much reduced. There have been a pickup in the sale of American pork and other people's pork to the Chinese. Their food markets are disrupted because of that hog thing, and we'll see how it shakes out. I've been in favor of the president's support for our farmers, and he has done that. He continues to do that. I actually expect that we'll do some other things. And one of the things that I've suggested, for example, is we should work with farmers and hunters and environmentalists on some new programs to maybe begin to take some farmland in the United States offline and use it more environmentally sound. And I think that that's a way that we could do that. And even if that's a longer-term program, and I think that would support prices and also make trade deals with our allies that allow for further expansions incrementally in our agricultural sales to them.
Talking with Van Mobley, a professor of history and economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin. Still time for you. What do you think about President Trump's approach on tariffs? We're at 800-642-1234. Van Mobley, we had U.S. Senator Ron Johnson recently and on our program criticizing President Trump's escalating trade war with China.
I don't believe anybody wins a trade war. I do believe that China is paying the highest price it is definitely affecting their economy far more than it is ours. So from that standpoint, if it's a relative thing, yeah, we're winning that one, but it still harms our economy.
So it still harms our economy. He went on to say it creates instability. You support the trade war with China, but that comes with a price, does it not?
Actually, in the long run, no, it could be better. And actually, for complicated economics reasons, I think that both economies were in danger of becoming over-specialized and over-dependent upon one another. And I think that in the long run, the tariffs will be useful for both the United States and China. Certainly in the United States, the tariffs have not prevented us from growing at a respectable rate. We have very low unemployment. We have wages at the bottom in particular that are going up. We also have revenue coming into the federal treasury that we didn't otherwise have. Now, all those are positive things, and I expect more of the same. So, and really, frankly, going forward, I think that probably we're going to, I don't know, we'll see what happens, and but I think that probably the tariffs will go up on that next tranche in mid-December. I think at the same time, if we do the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, I think that will give certainty to businesses that they know that the relationship between the United States and China will not be the same as it was in the past. And when they're making decisions about where they need to put their new factory, they'd better put it in North America, and they'd and I think that they will. And then we'll have certainty, which is what they've been crying out for. The certainty is that the world will be a little bit different than it was before. Well, and then we'll have had time to make adjustments.
Yeah, I want to take a look a little bit at the world before we look at the impeachment inquiry, because there are scholars out there who say that America hegemony has died, that the age of U.S. dominance in the world is over, and was the death of the U.S.'s status as a result of external causes, or was it happening because of Washington's behavior? So as you look at it, has the Trump administration lost trust with our allies, through tariffs, through the insults and the threats, withdrawing from the World Trade Organization, pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal, pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement? That can't help us on the world stage when we're trying to negotiate trade.
Oh, on the contrary, I think that the United States is doing the appropriate policy. And I would say this, the trade that the United States had with the rest of the world from World War II until just recently was really a trade where we sacrificed our own national economic interest and we gave things away to the allies. Now, we're still being very nice to our major allies, Mexico, Canada, Japan, Korea. I think that after Brexit, we may very well get the Brits back in. But, some of these other people are not our allies. The Chinese are not our allies. The Europeans they could come back in, but they have to think about what they want to do, and it's not clear. And then other than that, I mean, what are you talking about that we're irritating our allies? The Middle East, anybody who wants to continue American intervention in the Middle East is fine to win an election on that basis, but they're not going to win. The United States is done. So that's what I think. You're doing a great job with our allies. Nancy could help by passing the USMCA.
Well, let's quickly go here to the impeachment inquiry. You believe President Trump would have been within his rights to block military aid for Ukraine unless the country's leaders agreed to investigate the Bidens, a political rival. Why would that be okay?
It would be okay because there was an appearance, at least, of a conflict of interest involved in Bidens, who were in charge of American policy toward Ukraine at the very start of this new Ukrainian government after they have a revolution. Now, at least we need to sort of air this thing, everybody look at it, and then after we look at it, we can move forward on a better basis. The other thing is, that's it. There's an appearance of conflict. We need to air it. We are airing it, and then we're going to move forward together.
So are you saying a president may use government resources like military aid for their own personal or political gain?
Well, in this case, there was no quid pro quo, but I don't know that that's his own personal gain. That's a national interest. So sometimes the personal and the national interest are combined, and that's it. So I don't see any problem with it.
But following the interests, following the interests of the president's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, perhaps instead of the interests of the overall State Department on behalf of the United States of America.
I think that the president determines the national interest of the United States of America, not the State Department. It flows the other way. And then I would say, in this case, there was no quid pro quo, and they got their aid. And we've aired some past indiscretions, and we've all talked about it.
Van, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Van Mobley is a professor of history and economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin. Coming up, we look at how sleep deprivation affects people who work in emergency services, police officers, firefighters, ambulance drivers. Are you feeling sleep deprived in your job? Join in 800-642-1234. Back after this news update here on the Ideas Network.